Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Today we invite Lisa Johnson to the microphone. She's Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, and she has lots of great information to share with you about a whole variety of things going on in the garden. We can talk vegetables, we can talk flowers, we can talk all kinds of things. And certainly we look forward to hearing from you. So give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there, and we'd love to hear from you. And Lisa Johnson, welcome back. Great to have you with us again.
Thanks, Larry.
What are you hearing from people these days as in Dane County about problems or issues? Or
it's dry.
Yeah.
It's really, really dry.
Really, really dry.
I just sent out a press release from the Dane County Tree Board reminding people to water their trees because we aren't in a drought state yet, but we will be pretty soon.
Our neighbor's our lawn is about half covered with leaves, and they're from the neighbor's large tree, and I assume that
A good sign.
Not a very good sign at all. They should be out there watering that tree.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And really, that takes a lot of water.
Yeah,
a big
does.
Tree.
I just heard from Marla Eddy from the City of Madison Forestry that 10 gallons of water is 5 cents. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're watering mm-hmm. a small area, no big deal. But if you need to put down 50, 100 gallons for a very large size tree, that starts to add up when mm-hmm. you need to do it often.
Yeah. But if you want to keep the tree.
Yeah, which the value of the tree is much, much more than that. The shade, the cooling. All those rainwater interception, you know, with the storm runoff and keeping down your heating or cooling bills, all of that's important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we already have a number of photos up on our Facebook page, and I'd invite people to take a look at the page. There's some cucumber and, frankly, some yellowing cucumber leaves. Oops.
Cucumbers, all the cucurbitaceae plants are having a hard time this year. We're getting a lot of squash bugs coming in a little earlier than we might have expected them and doing quite well, unfortunately. We're also getting some of the squash vine borer, which bores into the stems and causes the whole plant to wilt because it destroys the vascular system. We're seeing, I haven't heard too much bacterial wilt, but I'm sure that that's on the palate
mm-hmm.
as well.
Oh, yeah.
Upcoming.
Becky in Appleton has something relating to cukes. Let's go there. Hi, Becky. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I think I might have those little yellow cucumber beetle bugs. How do I get rid of them? They're decimating my cucumber leaves.
Okay, can you describe them first so that I'm sure that we're dealing with the same insect?
Well, they fly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What color are they and how big are they?
They're yellow.
Okay. They got stripes.
They have a stripe. Yep.
Okay.
They have a stripe.
That sounds about right.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Those are tricky little devils, and they will also, of course, attack your, you know, if you have melons and squash and so on. And they will also feed on not only the leaves but the roots and the stems. They can stunt or kill your young plants. And the worst part about them is that they can transmit a disease that I was mentioning called bacterial wilt that causes the entire plant to wilt because it plugs up the vascular system of the plant. And once you get it, there's not much you can do. The entire plant is going to wilt and die. Now, what happens with these guys is that they overwinter as adults in the soil. You're usually going to see them in mid to late May. Of course, they were a little bit early this year. Generally, you know, we don't have too many of them, but this being an unusual year, we have seen more of them. And you can, you know, early in the season, you can use floating row covers. But now that, are your plants starting to bloom yet?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. So once we start to have blooming and the possibility of pollination, then we can't exclude those beetles with the floating row cover. There are a number of different insecticides that you can use. Seven is one of them. There are a couple of permethrin-based products that you can use. There are a number of different things that are out there. The thing is, though, that if you spray, that you have to worry about the bees. So
right.
The idea is to do it later in the day, kind of after the sun has gone down, because then the bees won't be so numerous at that point in time.
And I haven't put chemicals on my garden for 7 years.
Yeah. and it's not, you know, it's not something that you want to do lightly. You could try and use neem oil, which is a botanical product that is...
it's a contact product, though,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's an antifeedant, so that when you spray it on, the insects don't want to eat the leaves, or if they do, then they shortly thereafter stop eating. The problem is that you have to respray after mm-hmm. just a few days. Most of the organic or botanical products like that don't usually have a very long window of efficacy, so you often have to reapply. You can try spraying them off with water. You know, next year, if you have a problem with them early again, you can try and use that floating row cover. But at this point in time, if you use the floating row cover, then the bees can't pollinate the flowers, and then you don't have any anything to eat.
Right. Now, the neem oil, that doesn't hurt the bees, though, right?
Well, if they were chewing on the leaves, it would.
Okay.
It shouldn't. I would have to look that up to see if that's an issue on the pollen.
I don't think they chew the leaves, though.
No, but, if you got it on the flowers, whether is an issue in their pollinating, I don't know. I would have to check that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
I think I'll try neem oil. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
okay.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Ingrid in Springstead, turn to you now. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about cutworms. I found these worms that roll up into a ball at the base of most of my perennials, and I've seen them out in our vegetable garden, too,
yep.
when I've been digging. And I haven't noticed them before this year. And I'm wondering if it's just a year-by-year thing, or if they're here to stay, and what I could do to manage those, because they have totally decimated everything.
They we're hearing a lot about them this year. I wouldn't say that it's not something that we don't have every year. It's just that the numbers this year seem to be
a lot higher.
Yeah, and they got going earlier in the season, so they have been causing some havoc. Usually for things like protecting seedlings, you know, vegetable seedlings, what we advise people to do is you make a little collar out of cardboard, or you can buy these sorts of things too, out of a stiffer plastic, or some people will take a soda bottle and cut it. And the idea is that you sink it into the ground about an inch and a half deep, so that the cutworms can't get to the base of your plants. But once the plants are as big as they probably are at this point in time, like your perennials, then you start to have some issues. If you're not wanting to use chemicals, you can certainly, you know, every time that you see them, you can pull them out and dispose of them.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, you know, and the collars, it's a little hard to deal with them without using something.
Something, yeah.
Okay.
All right.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Ingrid. Bill in Racine, hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We've got a couple of spireas. I think they're bridal
wreath?
Yeah, with a white flower.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, those flowers are gone, and they were very nice looking. And I've never really pruned these plants at all, and I wanted to cut them back. What is the appropriate time to prune them, and how much can I cut off at one time?
Okay, well, spireas, being spring-blooming plants, will form their flower buds after they flower. So for the flower buds for next year, they usually start about 3 weeks after they flower to initiate those buds. And what you can do where, for that particular type of plant, there are two types of pruning. The first one is called renewal pruning, and if you haven't pruned them before, you might want to do that. And what you do is you cut out a third of the biggest, oldest stems right at the ground level, and then whatever is left, you can shape that. Now, you can take, because they're very vigorous plants, you can take them back probably by a third without, you know, in height without damaging them. The problem is that this year, if you're someplace that's experiencing drought, now you're in Racine. Oh, you guys are in the actual drought category.
Yes.
We don't want to stress the plants too much. And what pruning tends to do is stimulate new growth. So I guess I would be a little careful. Now, if you've been watering them so they aren't under stress in the first place, I would keep watering them, and you can be a little bit more aggressive with the pruning then. But if you haven't been watering them regularly, I'd be a little more cautious with the pruning.
Yeah, I just started watering them. So when should I wait? Till fall then to do this one-third of the big ones and to the ground level, and then what, shape the rest of them? Was that what it was?
Okay. If you prune in fall, then you will be cutting off all your flower buds for next year.
Oh, well, I don't want to do that.
No.
No.
So that's why with the spring blooming plants, you want to bloom them fairly soon after they flower, like within 3 weeks or so. You won't cut off all of the flowers, of course, but it certainly will make a difference. So if you are past that point at this point in time, you might want to consider doing it next spring right after they flower. Or if you're still within that 3 week sort of window, then you could go ahead and do that one-third pruning at the base and one-third in the height at this time. But do keep them watered.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's the optimum is next spring, and then right after they flower, then cut them back by this one-third.
You'd take out a third of the biggest, oldest stems at the base, and that's to keep them vigorous and growing, and then you take off a third of the height to shape it to the size that you want.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've been very helpful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks.
We do also have a pruning sheet that if you have internet access, you might want to look at. Let's see, that one.
The Learning Store? Is that the Learning Store?
No, that one's on Brian Huddleston's Plant Disease Diagnostics Clinic site, or the horticulture site, the hort.uwex.edu.
There you go. Lisa Johnson, our guest today, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, on Garden Talk, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for being with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest today, Lisa Johnson. Got to tell you that finally, we have arrived at the Garden Lover's Journey to England. I will be leaving with about 30 Wisconsin Public Radio listeners on Sunday. We'll be taking off for England. And boy, have we got a packed schedule for 9 days. We'll be visiting the Hampton Court Palace. The biggest flower show in the world is at Hampton Court Flower Show. And we'll be visiting some of the wonderful gardens, Secret Gardens of London, Royal Her Majesty's Wisley Garden, Penshurst Plant.
Yes, that's
Garden,
cool.
The Great Dexter Garden, Sissinghurst Gardens, Leeds Castle and Gardens. They have 500 acres on that.
Are you going to Kew?
Canterbury.
Canterbury. I've been. Yeah.
Cathedral and Gardens, Leeds Castle, the Rock Farm Gardens, Old Buckhurst. Pens in the Rocks, Bateman's.
And the list goes on.
And the list goes on. And I'm hosting a little. We're having a 4th of July, which is kind of interesting. Evening 4th of July celebration that I'll be hosting. It's going to be a lot of fun. So we'll be in London.
Very cool.
And County Kent. 3 nights in London and 4 nights in County Kent. And we're going to have a great time.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Lots of shoe leather.
Yeah, I'm going to take a couple of pairs of shoes.
Yeah. Along and rain gear.
And rain gear. Yeah, absolutely. I've got my raincoat. That's one of the first things that went into the suitcase.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be a lot of fun and wonderful, just fabulous hotels. So.
And you're going to post all this to Facebook.
We are definitely. You know, Judith gave me some information, and of course, I paid no attention to it. it's all of next week. I'll be back on like the 10th or so.
Because we want to see pictures.
And yeah, our friends at Earthbound Expeditions who are putting this on will be getting photos and video to Judith. She's going to be posting it up on our Facebook page for folks to enjoy. And of course, I'll try to write a few trip updates. And, you know, I'll have some photos. Hopefully, I'll be able to take some pictures and we'll send those. We'll send those on to Judith, too.
Excellent.
Lots of fun. Looking forward to it. And if you're listening and you're going with me, see you on Sunday in O'Hare.
Cool.
Roger in Deer Park, Illinois. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. We're getting rain, by the way, here.
Oh, we're jealous.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I have two things. First, I'll tell you how I dealt with the cucumber beetles, and second thing is I have a lot of flowers, bought about 60 or 70 of them from Prairie Nursery, and they're all doing well.
Good.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes, and so, I'll bring that question up first, and I'll tell you about the cucumber beetles. These bees that come around called Wolf Carter bees, they attack the good bees and scare everything away, butterflies, everything. So do you know any way of dealing with these Wolf Carter bees?
Can you spell that? I'm sorry, I'm not hearing that real well.
W-O-O-L-C-A-R-D-E-R. And they have hooks on their abdomen, the males, and they actually kill other bees. They're very territorial. They come around and monopolize your bee garden for about 2 to 3 weeks, and they'll run off all the other bees. And they go, you know, we have plants in the front and the back, they'll just go from the back to the front and just run off. You'll see them fly backwards into another bee, and they get them where their lung sac is at, and they kill other bees if they have to.
Huh.
So they're called Will Carter bees, and the reason they call them Will Carter is I guess it refers to how they make their nest or something like that. I think they're ground-dwelling bees. But
okay.
Anyway, throw that one out. I just kind of shoo them away. You know, I go out there with my hand and wave them away, and then they get aggravated sometimes and don't come back. But sometimes you go out there and you won't see any bees, and you wonder what's going on, and you'll see a couple of them around, and you'll see them attacking the other bees. Okay, I'll get to the cucumbers and beetles now. I teach a class at Harper College in photography, so I needed subjects last fall, and we have these plants called Country Girl. And beautiful flowers, and they bloom all the way up until November. And these things were devouring these plants. So I needed some specimens for my students to photograph. So I got a 1 gallon clear container. It's actually a water bottle, but it's polycarbonate. And if you go up to those beetles and you put the mouth of the container underneath them and cap, they'll fall into the container. And they don't fly out because it's too hard for them to do that. So I used to go out there 3 times a day and catch them in this container. And I really brought their populations down to where, you know, the flower damage stopped and you'd only see a few of them. So your business out there to capture them became less every day because there's less of them. And then we took in this, well, they're very photogenic, you know, and we could photograph them right through the container. So then that's how I dealt with them.
So and you did you use some kind of liquid in the container or?
What I would do is take a piece of the plant that they had half devoured.
Oh, I see.
Throw that in the container.
Okay, so you're trapping them, basically.
Yeah, and then they, when they saw the bait, they'd go there and wouldn't bother flying out. I had the cap perforated, and they'd live for... I just threw them in a garbage can when I was done.
Yeah.
Let the garbage truck take them. but that's how I got rid of them, and it worked pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for the tip.
Appreciate it very much.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye.
And the wool carder bees are, we know a little bit about them. They're
European.
They're European. And, of course, the honeybees they're attacking aren't native either.
Yeah, very, very good point. However, the honeybees are
certainly what we want. Yeah,
yeah, necessary for pollination.
Some scientists don't think they're causing too much trouble, but
yeah, I have not heard a report of them up here in Wisconsin, but that doesn't mean that.
Well, Roger's in Deer Park, Illinois, so
yeah, right, which is close.
Yeah, which is very close. So that's something to keep an eye on. That's maybe something to ask Phil Pelletieri about the next time.
Yeah, he's on
the next time he's on for sure, and we will. Carl in St. Killian, Wisconsin. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello, how's it going?
Great. What's on your mind?
Well, it's a lot of questions about oaks. Specifically, my first one is, we recently have an oak tree. I don't know which type. It's giving acorns, but in fact, the woodpecker is starting to devour it. It's about 15, maybe about 15 pecks already in the last week, and the tree just started giving acorns, so maybe it's a decade old.
And,
wow.
And what are the leaves like? Are they sharp pointed?
They are sharper pointed. I apologize. Okay. I plant a lot of other oaks, and I have questions on that too.
Probably
but because
oak,
I planted it when I was
black.
Younger, I don't know what type. Yeah, but
it's probably a red or black.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't believe it's northern red. I don't believe it's northern red. But how do I keep this woodpecker away?
That's usually when you have woodpecker damage, they're going after some kind of insect.
And I think it's ants.
Okay, it could be ants. The thing that we really worry about is the two-line chestnut borer, because that will attack oaks that are under stress. And so I would keep your oak watered, for one thing, to help it, you know, fight off any insects that may be causing issues. Has it got any broken branches or dieback or anything like that?
No, it's incredibly healthy.
And the holes, are they in a straight line? Are they?
No. They're pointed. You can clearly tell, like a beak would perfectly do that. They're funnel shaped.
No, like, are they in rows or are they?
No. They're okay. Starting. It just started in the last week. Because I always check my oaks, and I hear the woodpecker in the marsh often. Okay. We have a lot of woodpeckers, so I'm pretty positive it's a woodpecker. But I don't know if there's something to keep it away or, you know, I think there might be the start of an anthill or it's pretty dry around the root. I mean, should I poison the ants? Should I don't know what to do.
The tree.
And... Yeah, water the tree as a good starting point. Again, the woodpecker is going to be attracted to trees that are under stress and that have insect issues. And so... My guess is that it's after something. And
sure. Does it change the perspective, too, that this tree actually has some, not moss, but, you know, the green and blue stuff on it?
That's
on
lichens.
It? Yeah.
Yes. Actually, that's not an issue, and it does, in fact, indicate that you have good air conditions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a symbiotic critter that... is a mix of an algae and a fungi, and the algae provides the food for the organism, and the fungus provides the kind of the home for it.
If you're, is the damage kind of in the same area of the tree at about the same height?
No.
It's all over the place. I was going to say you could put some hardware cloth around the area.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful bird, but if there's one thing I like more than beautiful birds, it's my trees.
Yeah, sure.
And so,
you know, that sounds like a good David Drake question.
Yeah.
Okay.
David Drake is a wildlife ecologist at UW-Madison, and he's probably going to tell you there are some scare tactics you can use. You can put up some scare eye balloons. You can try noise when you see them out there to scare them away. If they're
owl statues.
Owl statues, and it's always a combination of things that will hopefully work. And you know, if all else fails and it's really doing some damage, you can go to the wildlife wildlife control specialist and actually get a permit to eliminate a problem bird. Most people don't want to do that.
No,
and you probably don't either. So the more you can do just to kind of scare it away and keep it out of there, the better off you're going to be.
If it's not attracted to your trees in the first place because they're not under stress, that'll help too.
Yeah.
Okay. And then in regard to other oaks, I've been trying to plant an oak grove, and I've been buying a lot of oaks the last few years, especially pin oak, regal prince oak, and then also I've worked on northern red, although I'm not happy with that. Which oak should I stay away from in regard to wilt and issues? What oaks do you recommend, and which oaks would you stay away from?
If there is oak wilt in your area, you want to stay away from the oaks that have the pointy leaves. So the pin oak, the red oak, the black oak, those are the most susceptible. Now, that's not to say that oaks that have rounded lobes are not going to possibly die from that too, but they are somewhat more resistant.
Hardy.
And again, if you keep them healthy by keeping them watered, that will help them resist that sort of thing.
Yeah, okay. White oak, swamp white oak.
Yeah,
and bur oak.
Yeah, okay, all of those would be good.
Okay, any others? Bur, white, and white swamp oak?
Well, one thing...
I've been planting those too.
I would caution you, I mean, an oak grove is a wonderful thing, but diversity also is helpful because if you were to get an infestation of oak wilt coming in and all you have are oaks, then...
Correct. And I totally agree with that, because on the other side of the marsh, I've diversified with maples, willows, honey locusts.
Excellent.
But I teach at Oakfield, so
so you want those oaks. Yes, I understand. They're beautiful trees.
And now, get some water on them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, if I do have dead limbs on an oak tree, now I know that I've been told by others to not trim them until March to November, but if they're dead, should I get them off immediately?
Usually they recommend not pruning at all for oaks, as you mentioned, not until, you know, like November through March, although this year we had to quit early because March was too warm.
Yeah, December, January, and February are about the...
Yeah. The safest
About
months.
The safest months.
If it is totally dead, it's... You could potentially take it off, but I guess I'd rather wait, if at all possible, until then.
Yeah. Good luck. Thanks a lot, Carol, for calling. Appreciate it. Peter in La Crosse, what's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. I love your show.
Thanks
for taking my call. Best garden ever this year, except my tomatoes have no blossoms. This is the first year I've tried growing them on a single stalk. And early on, I pulled out some early suckers, and the leaves in the lower part of the plants began to roll. It was tomato leaf roll, I think. And I'm now getting some really nice green vegetation, but that's all I'm growing is green vegetation. There are no blossoms on them. And they're the easiest tomatoes I've ever grown. They're early girls, big boys, and one's a celebrity. So what do you got for blossoms on tomatoes?
Okay, it's probably temperature related. Tomatoes need... well, first of all, they need night temperatures that are over 55 degrees in order to initiate flower buds and to not have them abort. However, if the night temperatures are over like 70, 75, then they can also drop those buds or not have them initiated. Another thing is, although they do like their nitrogen, if you've got too high of a nitrogen content, you might be getting yourself a lot of leaves at the expense of the fruits. Those are the first things that I would think of.
And if they're, are they in pots or are they in the ground?
Oh, they're in the ground.
Oh.
They're in the ground. Okay. And they're organic. I've been using an organic dried manure.
Okay. All right. So that shouldn't be an issue then with having too much nitrogen. My suspicion is that it's the weather pattern that we've been having. And I'm fairly sure that you will start seeing flower buds getting initiated fairly soon. But I've been expecting to get some calls like this. If the tomatoes are already bearing, we're getting blossom end rot. And if they aren't already bearing, then we're expecting some abortion and so on.
We're picking I'm picking my first tomato off the plant today.
All right.
Like, well, I'm not sure. You know, the early girls, and they're about, and they're not very big. They're probably like about smaller than the tennis ball for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Probably more like about two golf ball size.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of the early fruits tend to be a little smaller or, you know, get blossom end rot. Once the plant really gets bearing, I'm sure that they'll size up for you.
I hope so.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot, Peter. By the way, while we're talking about container, these are in containers.
Mm-hmm.
The watering on container vegetable, you got to be out there pretty much
every day. Yeah, day. And when we have 90 degree temperatures, you might even need to be out there twice, depending on how big the root system is, you know, and how big the mass of the plant is.
Yeah.
So you don't want to let your tomatoes wilt. That blossom end rot that I was mentioning is caused by inconsistent uptake of calcium. And since calcium is taken up in the water stream through the vascular system, if you don't have your plant consistently moist, then you end up with blossom end rot problems.
Haven't got that yet. Hopefully I will. Rick in Milwaukee. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, hi, good morning. I'd like to still plant some sunflowers, the mammoth 10-foot variety. I'm wondering if it's too late for them to reach maturity.
Oh, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head how many, whether that's a 60-day or an 80-day. Oh, well, what you should do is check the seed pack. And it should tell you how many days till maturity.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is something like 80 days, 60 days. If it's something like 60 days, that's 2 months. So that
Fine.
Should be okay. But if it's something like 80 days, 90 days, then you're getting a little bit iffy.
Maybe, depending on, you know, our
if we
climate.
Keep having the hot weather that we're having, they may grow faster than normal, and so you may be okay. You know, throw a few seeds in there. It can't hurt.
Right. Is there a way to accelerate the process of using a fertilizer? What might that benefit, or at least get to the flowering stage so the bees can use them?
I wouldn't recommend that to try and accelerate things. The temperature will, and having enough moisture will accelerate things. You be using the fertilizer if you have like a higher phosphorus fertilizer, that will encourage some of the flowering. But it's not going to really speed up the process.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, sure. Thanks a lot for calling. And Camille in Frankfort, Michigan. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I have a friend from Manitowoc who now lives in California. We've both been growing irises for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to visit her, and she had this huge, what looks like a seed pod, growing on one of her iris plants about 2 feet above the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And she said eventually, actually, it did turn out to be full of two different kinds. She was trying to describe them to me, what looked like seeds. So I wanted to know, I've never seen that before, what's going on with that? And would any of those seeds be viable?
The seeds should be viable. Whether they will end up looking a whole lot like the parent plant, though, is another question. Probably some proportion of them will, but they may also look, you know, have a different color to them and so on. It sounds like you may have different maturities of the seeds, possibly, but it could also be that you're getting some of the different coloration due to the pollination issues, which means that you have, during pollination, you're going to get an exchange of genetic material, and so you're going to have some genetic variability in the offspring, and the seeds may reflect that by having different colors. So,
and what caused the pod to form? I've never seen a pod form on an iris plant like that before.
Oh, they do. They do. It's not all that uncommon. If you cut off the dead flowers right away, obviously you're not going to get that to happen. But we do see them around here.
And would you put the seeds in, you know, a little bit of soil? And I mean, normally we just
I'd have to look up the protocol for that. Whether they need a cold period, whether they should be dried first. I have never grown them from seeds, so I'm not sure what exactly the procedure is. But it's something you could find out fairly easily, I think, by just Googling it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening into this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator. Went online to my Facebook page. We're looking at that now at the Larry Mueller Show. And Gerhard sent a picture of the vegetable garden. And it looks pretty darn nice, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Boy, you're doing a great job there. It says no insect invasion as of yet. Tom says his young maple tree in the front yard has a green crust around its trunk. The leaves look like fall, changing color, drying up and falling. Oh, it's not good.
Mm-mm.
I've been watering it as often as I can. Is the tree a goner?
The green crust isn't ringing any bells with me. Thomas, maybe if you could send us a digital photo of that.
Be nice
that
to see.
Yeah, that would be helpful. Usually, though, early fall color is not a real good sign.
No.
That indicates a lot of stress, and the stress can be caused by anything from disease to injury to drought, lots of insect problems. I'm not real hopeful. It would be good to see it. It might just be that it's under stress at the moment because of the drought, but you say you're watering it, so that might not be it. Anyway, send us a picture.
And Linda sent us a picture of a caterpillar.
That's
which
a gorgeous caterpillar. I wish I knew what it was.
Yeah, we don't know what it was. Maybe somebody else knows. Take a look at it. It's a really pretty caterpillar. Go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. And take a look, and then you'll get to see the garden and all the other things, too, that people have posted. So I hope you'll do that, because that's a pretty cool picture.
Yeah, it is.
And Roger in Sauk City up next. Roger, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, Sauk County. Hi, Larry and Lisa. The guy who was having trouble getting tomato blossoms, mm-hmm. I believe he said he was growing Big Boy or Better Boy and Celebrity. I believe those are both determinate varieties.
So oh, well, that would explain it.
Is what, you can,
I thought he said early comment. Girl, and I can't...
I'm not sure, but you can talk about what happens if you prune a determinate variety. The other comment I wanted to have, say that the guy who wanted to get in a jump on his late sunflower planting, soaked the seeds for 10 to 12 hours.
Ah, good
that'll
idea.
That'll help, too, with the germination. That'll speed up the germination process. Okay, for the determinate tomato plants, flower on the ends of the branches. And so if you are pruning those off, that could explain why your tomato isn't flowering. Indeterminate plants, on the other hand, the ones that keep growing all through the season and keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and you have to keep staking, those will flower in the leaf axils where the leaf and the stem join. So with those, if you're just pruning off the ends or selected stems, that shouldn't affect it. Now, some people do prune out the what they refer to as suckers at the base. That can help. One thing I do recommend for disease control is pruning off the bottom set of leaves up to about 18 inches, and making by doing that, you are keeping those leaves out of contact with potential spores that are being thrown up from the soil when you water or when you get rain, if we ever get rain.
Never ever get rain, yeah.
Another thing to do is to use a mulch that provides a physical barrier between the soil and your tomato plant.
Mm-hmm. Liz in Viroqua, hello.
Hello. I'm calling to advocate the use of the wild bird friends we have for insect control. And the way I'm doing it, we have a dry season, so lots of bugs, and we're in a drought. Mm-hmm. So I put bird baths all around where I want them to pick the insects off my garden, and it's working like a charm.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
Wonderful idea.
It's unbelievable. There's so many of them. And they're coming in into the bird baths, and then they go through the plants, they go over the soil, and they pick everything off.
So what kind of birds are you seeing?
Oh, my gosh. Everything. Rose-breasted grosbeaks. We have eagles out here. They're not in the garden, of course.
And they'd be feasting on your birds rather than...
indigo buntings and...
Oh,
and
beautiful.
All these beautiful birds are just helping me out in my garden. I just put them... And I change the water every day.
Mm-hmm.
And they're bathing in gangs.
Wow.
And then they're out there.
It's a pool party at Liz's.
By the way, it doesn't hurt that I have a huge raspberry patch.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But they're picking the bugs out.
Oh, that's a great story, Liz.
But, you know, you have to also pull the mulch back during this time, even though you're tempted to not do that because they need to get at the insect cases.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just put the mulch back, and I weed a lot. I'm out there every morning weeding.
Well, good for you.
They're coming in, and there are little helpers, and they're in the wild, and they're all over the place.
A great tip.
Just put the bird baths out there, and they'll help you out.
Thank you, Liz. And it really is a lot of fun to watch the birds.
Oh,
you have good bird baths out there, and so you get the advantage of getting to see the birds, and then getting your insects eaten up too.
And depending on the type of plants that you plant, you may be encouraging hummingbirds and other birds to visit along with that water technique. I like that pool party idea.
Beth and Merrill, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
I have a question. Back in March, early April, we noticed on our flowering cran bushes, we have five of them. They were beautiful. They've been going for about 4 years. They looked like they got hit by frost. They started shriveling up. And we thought, oh, we'll just leave it and see what happens. Well, it turns out it wasn't frost. It's a bug. And one of the trees is totally decimated. The four other bushes around it were starting to get eaten. They're they shrivel up, they get this white powdery stuff on them, and they get little holes in them. So we took them to, we took a couple of the leaves to the place where we bought the bushes, and he said, yep, it's some kind of bug. Cut the tree down until you don't see it anymore, and hopefully when it grows back, they won't be there. Well, we did that. We cut a lot out of one tree and some out of the trees that were next to it that were affected, and they're coming back. So my question is, do we need to cut that one tree? Do we need to just take it out? It's right in the middle of a row of five, of course.
Okay. Are we talking about cranberry bush viburnums, first of all?
Yes.
Okay, that's good. It sounds like you've got a couple different things going on.
Yeah.
The white powdery stuff on
powdery
the leaves
mildew?
Is probably powdery mildew, although, well, you're up in Merrill, so you're having cool wet weather, I assume.
Hot and dry.
Is it hot and dry up there? Okay.
Yeah.
I know in some places north of us, they're swimming. And
No.
Not with you. Okay.
No.
Usually we don't see powdery mildew in hot, dry weather. We tend to see it in humid, cooler conditions. But an insect wouldn't usually cause that. Now, the thing that I typically do see on viburnums is the viburnum borer, which is a clear-wing moth that lays its eggs at the base of the plant, and the larvae then will bore in, and you'll see this sawdusty stuff at the base. You'll see holes in the stems, and then you would get that wilting and curling and so on. And yes, by cutting them down, you might be removing the larva, but you're also removing a lot of tissue, and during a hot, dry summer, that might not be the way to go about it. Have you actually seen any of these insects? Because they don't feed
not.
On the leaves.
Well, no, what we noticed is, like I said, we have holes on the little holes in the, on the leaves. I'm holding one right now. In fact, I'm out at the tree right now looking. Here's a leaf that's getting chewed up pretty bad with holes. It's got a little bit of it on the backside. It's got the grayish white.
Oh, that's downy mildew. Okay, that's on the backside of the leaf.
Well, it's on both. It's scaly, kind of whitish, icky. Ugh. And then the ones that aren't too affected are, like, I'm looking at one, they look like they're burnt. They have, it's brown, scaly stuff, and they're shriveling up.
Okay. I don't think that's viburnum borer, then. It could be downy mildew. You could have some kind of scale. The best thing to do would be to take a sample into your local extension office, or you can email a picture of it to Phil Pelletieri at the Insect Diagnostic Lab in Madison, and he can probably identify what critter you have. It's very important to make sure that we're, you know, identifying the critter correctly so that we use the correct treatment on it. I was talking to a gentleman the other day that had called me on the phone, and he said he had spots on his leaves and he wanted to use a fungicide. And when I got the sample of the leaf, it was actually an insect problem. So using fungicide wouldn't have worked. So I want to make sure that we know what we're dealing with here.
Sure.
Okay. So I will take a picture and send it to Phil then. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Jim in Pence, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
What do I do with the runners on my ever-bearing strawberries? They're very healthy plants, very prolific in producing berries. I mulch them over good in the winter, even though we'll get up to 250 inches of snow and it's not necessary, but I still mulch them over good. So basically, just what I do with the runners.
Okay.
Well, you don't need to necessarily do anything with them. That's how the plant reproduces. Now, if you want to get bigger strawberries, you can pinch those runners off. It will limit the amount of strawberries that you get, but you will get bigger strawberries. The other thing is that since strawberries are not really long-lived plants, at some point you do need to let those daughter plants develop so that you can renew your strawberry patch.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And lots of callers here online. But Lisa, we have another watering question that relates to plants. And again, if you've got plants in a pot and they're outside, you ought to be watering pretty much every day, do you think?
Probably at this point in time. Now, if you just planted a smaller annual plant into a bigger pot, you may be able to do it every other day. If it's in the shade, it may be every other day. I would check every day is what I would do, and you know, stick your finger in there and see how it's doing. In areas of the state where we have had adequate rainfall, obviously, not a big deal, but as we get farther on in the season and your plants get bigger and the root system takes up more of the space in the pot and you've got more foliage to support, then usually every day is going to be what's required.
Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. You're listening to Garden Talk. Our guest, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, specializes in horticulture education for home gardeners and for hort professionals in the green industry. So it's great to have her along. Thank you so much for listening in. You can join us. Go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show if you'd like to post a photo, maybe we can identify for you, or call us at 1-800-642-1234. We'd love to hear from you. And lots of callers online because lots of Facebook or lots of photos as well. And Lisa, we've got a plant that we're trying to identify, and I'm not sure if we're going to be able to identify that plant. It's something that,
yeah, it's pink and five-petaled. It's not that invasive Dame's Rocket, which is actually in the mustard family. I thought it might be a silene or it might be a soapwort, and it doesn't seem to have the seed pods of the silene, I don't think.
Okay.
But
well, we'll try.
Yeah, we'll keep working at it here.
We'll keep trying. And maybe if you want to join our Facebook page or go and take a look at the Larry Mueller Show, you can offer some advice on it as well. But you're saying that it doesn't look like it's silene and it's not the invasive that someone thought it was. Okay.
Yeah, it might be a soapwort of some kind.
Kathleen in La Crescent.
Area.
All right, Kathleen in La Crescent, your turn.
Hi, thank you very much.
Sure.
I am trying to, my father passed away last year, and we have moved into his, now our lovely home along the Mississippi, and he was an amazing gardener, and but the last 15 years of his life wasn't able to take care of his garden, so I'm trying to bring them back to life. And while I have a million questions, I'll keep it to one. I seriously have got more questions than I could possibly anybody have time for, but it's about irises. Another iris question for you.
Okay.
They did not bloom this year, and I think the reason is because they are so overgrown to the point where the corms are up out of the ground.
Oh,
now I've dug some of they're out of the ground by at least in some places actually almost 2 inches. Now I've dug some of them out and have tried to split them up along what appear to me to be their natural breaking off point. And what I've noticed is that some of the older parts of them have actually got like little holes.
Yeah,
in them.
That's iris borer. I take it these are German bearded iris?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. What I would do is in the fall, that's the best time to do it, is you dig up the entire clumps and go through them and discard the ones that are mushy or that have iris borers in them. and cut back the foliage to about 4 or 5 inches. If there are any of them that are rotting, cut off the rotten parts. And then you let them sit for about 3 or 4 days so that the ends dry up, and the cut ends, that is. And then you can replant them and reposition them. And they should be planted so that about half of the rhizome is above the soil and half of it is below. When they do start to get crowded like that, they do tend to not bloom anymore. And so I'm not real surprised to hear that. I'm also not real surprised to hear about the iris borer. Now, what you can do about that, if you don't mind using chemicals, is in the spring, you can put down a product called variously. You might find it labeled as Merit. You might find a brand name called Bear Advanced. Bear Advanced Lawn and Garden Insect Killer, something on that order. The active ingredient is imidacloprid, imidacloprid. And we use that for boring types of insects like the bronze birch borer, but also iris borer. And you can sprinkle those granules around the plant in the spring, water them in, and that's all you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that would be a one-time thing, and then...
the imidacloprid is yearly if you have problems with it. If you don't find many of the rhizomes have holes in them, then you could maybe get away with every other year or every 3 years or so.
Okay, one more quick question, and we have a well. Is that going to be something I need to worry about with the well? Because I don't like using chemicals, but
sure.
I would like to save these if I can.
Mm-hmm. Have you got real sandy soil?
Yeah, we're right on the riverbank.
Okay, and are you right near the well with the iris? Or
Some of them are within probably about 25 feet.
That shouldn't translocate that far. That should be
okay. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Sure. Thank you for calling. John in Chippewa Falls. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question. I have two different kinds of beetles that are attacking my... Well, I know the one was eating the leaves for sure, but I don't know if this other beetle is. I think they're rose beetles or rose bugs, and they were eating the leaves of my apple trees, cherry trees, pear trees, and they're getting all over my raspberry bushes also.
Are they Japanese beetles by chance? Can you describe them to me?
They're olive-ish in color.
Shiny? Metallic?
No, they're not metallic. The new ones are metallic. But the ones that were on it a couple weeks ago, they just decimated. They ate holes in every leaf on the whole tree.
Okay.
It's just a young tree. I just put it in the ground.
Are they kind of a coppery color? Kind of roundish beetles?
No, they're a dull... Well, the ones that are on it right now are, yes, correct. But the ones that ate it all up, you know, a month ago, they're just real dark olive colored.
Okay, that may be a rose chafer. Let's go with the Japanese beetles since they're on there now. With the Japanese beetles, since they're around for so long, it's really difficult to treat for them. But there are a couple of things that you can do. You can try neem oil. Sometimes that'll help. You can also use a kaolin clay product called Pyganic that you can spray on your fruit trees, and that creates a coating. It is labeled for organic production, and it creates a coating that kind of confuses the insects, and so they don't tend to eat the leaves and the developing fruits as much. Now, for rose chafer, I am not real familiar with that. That's not something that we tend to see very often. Kind of a olive green, kind of matte colored beetle. Is that what it looked like?
Yeah, and, yeah. and they're always you know, piggybacked up on top of each other.
Oh, that sounds like Japanese beetles.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like Japanese beetles.
Well, I know what the Japanese beetle is. They're on there right now. But these other ones, my I always remember my mom just calling them rose bugs because they were all over her rose bushes.
Okay. Unfortunately, there are a number of different insects that attack both roses and fruit trees. Probably the best thing to do would be to send a digital picture of those other ones. Are there any of them left, or are they gone now?
The Japanese beetles are there right now, but
the other.
I'm sure if I look, I can find some of them other ones.
Yeah, yeah. Send a photo of those, or send the insect to Phil Pelletieri so we can get a correct identification. Because if it's rose chafers, then we have one way to go. If it's a different insect, then there are other things we might want to do.
Okay.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I had an email from Jolene, who likes to grow heirloom tomatoes, and some years the inside center, just under the stem, this tough white area develops.
I've
had that too.
Yeah.
What is it? Do you have a way to avoid it? I don't know how you avoid it.
Well, okay. There are a couple of things that might be happening. First of all, if you're seeing this on the inside of the tomato at certain times of the year, it could be related to the maturity of the tomato. There are some varieties that do it more than others. There is something called kind of green shoulders that when you have a fruit that is supposed to be red, but it gets kind of greenish around the stem, then you tend to have more of that white material on the inside. It's just thicker walls on the inside of the tomato. And again, it can be due to varietal differences, or it could be due to the stage of maturity. So there isn't a whole lot that you can do about it. If you find it particularly on one particular variety, you might want to switch varieties so that you don't have that problem so much.
And Joan emailed, say, my grandmother and mother always pinched out the suckers that grow in the fork of the tomato branches. Why do that?
Well, there are some. Now, this would have to be on an indeterminate plant. But what you're doing is you're doing a couple things. You're opening up the plant so that you get better air circulation. The suckers also don't tend to bear the fruit, so you are allowing bigger fruits to develop, less of them, but bigger fruits. And you're also helping to prevent shading of the fruits that are developing. Now, that can be a bad thing if we have hot, dry conditions, because you can get scalding of the fruits. But that's some reasons that people do that.
And Anne in Iowa County wants to know if it's too late to replant cucumbers.
Ooh, yeah,
probably
a little
too late.
Bit.
And Debbie in Grant County wants to know about fertilizing tomatoes. She has both in-ground and in-pot tomatoes, so be good to recommend for both.
Yeah, okay, with the ones in the pot, every time you water, and of course you should water till the water comes out the bottom, you're leaching some of the nutrients from the soil mix out of that pot. So they're probably going to need fertilizer a little more often than the ones in the ground where they have better room for the roots to spread and to be able to pull up nutrients and so on. So I'd say the ones in the ground about once a month, the ones that are in a pot, you might need to do it twice a month. It depends on the concentration that you're using. Probably a 10-10-10 if you're going to be using a traditional fertilizer. If you're going to be using something like compost tea or an organic fertilizer, probably twice a month is going to be required. Now, if it starts to get really, really hot again in the 90s, the tomatoes are not going to need as much fertilizer because their growth is going to slow down. So usually we don't recommend as much fertilizer in July. However, we have July right now, it appears. Mm-hmm. So you might not need to do a whole lot of that. That was a really nebulous answer, but it's one of those nebulous sorts of things.
Mary Ellen in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
I have a lacinato kale growing in a box.
Okay.
And it's L-A-C-I-N-A-T-O, kale.
Mm-hmm.
Plant.
Yeah,
and
real lacy kind of foliage.
Bumpy.
Yeah.
Sort of, yes. And it has a bunch of holes in it. Something's eating it.
Okay. It could be flea beetles. Are the holes small or are they bigger?
They're not too big.
Okay. Have you seen an insect on there?
I have not seen an insect. Every time I look, I see nothing.
Okay. How are the holes, like little pin-sized holes or pinhead?
No, they're bigger than that.
Okay. Then it might be earwigs. We have been having a heck of a time with earwigs this year. They are attacking all kinds of things that they might not usually attack because of the dry conditions. They're going after just about everything. And since they show up at night to do their dirty work, we don't typically see them. We just see what's happening during the day. So what you might want to do, you said they're in a pot?
Yes, they're in a box up off the ground.
Okay. What you might want to do is cover them with floating row cover at night and see
with
if...
what?
The floating row cover, it's like a cheesecloth. It's something that you use to keep insects off of plants. And
okay.
Unless they're in the soil of your pot and coming out at night, I'm assuming they must be coming in, you know, somewhere else.
Yeah, I don't think they're in the soil because the soil was all new.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean anything, does it?
No.
Doesn't necessarily. You might just, you know, lightly dig around in there a little bit and see if you see any of the earwigs. They're the ones with the big pinchers on the back.
Yeah, I know what they are.
Yeah, awful things, aren't they?
Yeah.
The other thing is that I have been hearing some reports of the what I used to call roly-poly bugs or sow bugs, the little gray guys that look kind of like armadillos. Typically, they're not going to attack plants either, but I have been hearing that on at least young plants sometimes, seedlings and so on, they've been out this year. So I would try the floating row cover because the nice thing with kale is you don't need pollination, so you can... cover those plants and, you know, grow them under the floating row cover if you need to so that nothing can get to them.
Otherwise, just cover them at night?
Right. Yeah, if that doesn't work, then you might want to try covering them through the season or at least for a month until, you know, we see hopefully the weather pattern will change.
I can get the
Yeah, you can get that at a garden center.
Okay.
And
all right.
The sunlight goes through it, so it's not a problem.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Let's turn to Helen in Madison next. Helen, hi. Thanks for waiting. Appreciate your call.
Well, I appreciate speaking with you, and by the way, have a wonderful time in England.
Oh, thank you.
our problem was, for the first time, purslane just covered our vegetable garden. Is another nickname for that chickweed?
No.
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 Okay.
And just to make sure that we've got the right name, it's kind of a succulent plant with sort of teardrop-shaped leaves.
Very fleshy leaf.
Yes, yes, yeah. And red stems. Yeah, that is purslane. Uh-huh. And typically you will see it in areas where you're cultivating for the first time or where there's new soil that's been added. They do pull out pretty easily, which is nice. And some people actually eat it. You can put it in your salad and so on. I don't know. I tried it and I'm not particularly thrilled with it. But I pulled a lot of that stuff out of my parents' vegetable garden when I was a kid.
Well, we did pull it all out. It took 3 days.
Yeah.
And the problem is there's a little pieces from the
stems. Yeah, yeah.
Not the stems, the roots.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'm wondering, in a vegetable garden, can we spray something in there, or in the future, for any kind of weeds, is there something? We don't like to use products on near vegetables unless it's really safe.
Well, mulching would be better,
yeah,
wouldn't it?
Now, with the purslane, it is only an annual. So if you got it before it went to seed, the roots are not going to survive the winter, and it shouldn't come back to haunt you next year. But yes, like Larry was saying, mulch is a good option. You can also use one of those three-prong sorts of things to try and get any more of the weeds out of the way. And I don't like to recommend herbicides either for vegetable gardens. If you possibly can, that's the way that I would treat it, is try and get the rest of those roots up if you see it starting to come back, and then mulch.
We always mulch around our tomato plants.
Oh,
and they even found their way up through there.
But they're at least easier to pick than
pull. Yeah, at least they do pull a lot easier than some things.
Okay, so now we don't have to worry about them coming back from these little roots right now.
Right. Well, they may come back this year yet, but they shouldn't overwinter for you.
Okay.
And if you got them before they went to seed, then you should be in good shape.
They had the beautiful yellow flowers, but they didn't get into the seed stage.
Oh, that's good.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call very much. And Lisa, in our last minute, I think water is a key here for trees. We don't want to forget about our trees.
Yeah. A lot of people, it's easy to forget about them because they seem like, oh, they're so big that they shouldn't need any extra water. But they really do. And do make sure a way to figure out how much water to put in is you take the diameter of the tree and you multiply by 5. And that should give you the amount of
gallons.
Yeah. Gallons that you would need.
And so for some big trees, that's a lot of gallons, but it's well worth it.
Yeah, and you don't necessarily have to do it every day. You want to try and apply about an inch of water a week.
Well, now, Lisa, you're going to have to go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show next week because, we're going to be getting photos up and videos of our trip to England.
Oh,
and Judith's going to be putting
cool.
them up. Earthbound Expeditions folks are going to be doing some of that, but I'll have my camera there, and I will have actually my phone will be my camera probably.
yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be a lot of fun, and look forward to it. And Judith, thanks for...
I'm jealous.
she's waving bye already. Get the heck out of here, she said. She's doing the show for me, and that, as always, is wonderful, so... And thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. And thank you for listening. We'll see you in 10 days or so. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.